I got a question for you. When was the last time you lied? Mine was just now when I told Madison I was late because I had to go buy a razor, but actually it's because I was making a TikTok in the car. So now I got a second question. When was the first time you lied? You might be able to call your parents and ask if they remember, but while your parents often keep track of a lot of baby milestones, I'll bet that baby's first lie isn't often one of them. There are a lot of critical skills you have to develop to transform from a completely dependent potato to a fully functional, self-aware person. So when our parents fail us, scientists can fill in the gaps. Not only can they tell you when you probably started lying, but when you developed a sense of rhythm, internalized the concept of possibility, and more. We've got 7 of your milestones to break down here, so let's jump right in. Research shows that people lie pretty much every day. For me, the most common lie is the one I tell myself. I'll remember that. I don't need to write it down. And it's well established that kids as young as 3.5 years old are able to lie, although usually kids that young are telling really poor, flimsy lies. The skill really settles in at around 7 or 8, when kids can develop consistent lies and they can stick to their story. Still, that means lying starts sometime before 3.5 years of age. And to figure out when, researchers need to give children the opportunity. For example, in one study published in 2013, they told their batch of 2- and 3-year-olds to not peek at a toy while an experimenter turned their back. And then they asked the kids if they peeked or not. Most of the kids took a peek, and the majority of the 2- and younger 3-year-olds who did told the truth about it. But a whopping 90% of kids over 3.5 lied about it. So basically, the older the peeker, the more likely they lied. Now, as you might already suspect, they were really bad at lying. Of the children who peeked, 76% forgot to pretend they didn't know what the toy was and blurted it out when asked. Total amateurs. Get your act together. So according to this study, lying starts as early as 2 years old and becomes increasingly in vogue as you approach 4. Lying isn't the only trickery you acquire as a child. You also figure out how to use loopholes. Adults do this regularly, like when your boss gives an end-of-day deadline and then you submit the thing at 11:59 p.m. because they didn't specify the end of the business day, or you promise not to spend any more money on takeout for the rest of the week, and then you use your credit card reward points to do it. As a very young child, you only have 2 options when a demand is placed on you: compliance or non-compliance. But according to a 2025 study, this changes at around the age of 5. By collecting parent reports of their children's behavior, as well as observing kids in experimental conditions, the researchers found that you eventually recognize the loophole as a 3rd option. You don't have to fully comply, but you might also miss out on the trouble that full non-compliance lands you. The team also found that using loopholes becomes increasingly popular after age 5 and peaks at around 7 or 8. My son has one of these. His loophole is one more video, but then he picks like a 50-minute long video. Good job, buddy! I didn't notice at all. It's worth noting that the scientists found these mental gymnastics weren't just used because they cleverly avoid compliance. According to the kids, they found this kind of malicious compliance funny. So if your boss is upset about the pre-midnight submissions, just tell them to blame your 5-year-old self. That's the one who started it. That inner 5-year-old child can probably empathize with your boss, though, because childhood is also when you first develop empathy. In a study published in 2025, researchers looked at babies both in the UK and Uganda to investigate how cultural differences influence the development of empathy between the ages of 9 months and 18 months. But this is a little harder to study than, say, kindergartners using loopholes. There are plenty of ways you can feel empathy for another person without that feeling manifesting actual words or even actions. And 9-month-olds are notoriously hard to interview. So this particular study measured empathy using 2 metrics. First, whether the baby demonstrated concern through their facial expressions, and second, if they provided any sort of comfort. The kids went through 2 rounds of testing, one at 9 months and then again 9 months later. During phase 1, they only interacted with their caregiver, but for phase 2, they did the experiment twice, one with the caregiver and once with an experimenter, better known as a complete stranger. Whoever the adult was, after they got the baby's attention, they either channeled their inner footballer and feigned an injury with a corresponding sound, like exclaiming, "Ouch!" or gasping, or they made a control sound that the researchers described as mild surprise. 9-month-olds from both cultures showed concern when this injury happened, suggesting empathy may start even younger than that. But acting on on that empathy and trying to comfort the adult was much more common at 18 months. In addition, the researchers noticed that when it came to comforting, it mattered who the babies were showing empathy for. Infants from both countries were much more likely to comfort their caregiver over some random experimenter. And finally, the study's cross-cultural angle didn't come up totally empty-handed. There was a difference in when the children decided to comfort. UK babies usually did it before the adult verbalized their injury with something like, "I hurt myself," whereas Uganda babies often waited to comfort the adult until after that confirmation. So it seems like empathy across the world is blooming at 9 months, and by 18 months, both culture and stranger danger are already shaping how a toddler acts on it. Object permanence is basically knowing something is there even when you can't see it, including your keys that fell into the black hole that lives between your couch cushions. A baby might think that that thing ceases to exist, but you know that the keys are there. Somewhere. To study when object permanence begins, one team of researchers chose to monitor attention. After all, really young babies might not have the physical prowess to crawl around searching for something after it's disappeared. And to make something disappear for their baby test subjects, who were all in the vicinity of 5 months old, the team conducted a little magic act. From the baby's perspective, they would see a box sitting just behind a sort of drawbridge flap. Eventually, that drawbridge would raise and block their view of the box. In one condition, when the bridge hit 90 degrees, it'd lower back down to its starting position, ostensibly because the box blocked it from rotating any further. But in the other, the bridge would continue to rotate past where the box used to be, doing a full 180 degree until it hit the ground, and then return to its starting position, revealing the box once again. While magicians never revealed their secrets, scientists have to in the methods section, and you can read all about this experiment there. To a kid who had not developed the skill of object permanence yet, this would be no big deal, but to a kid who had, this would be impossible. The study's cohort of 5-month-olds stared longer at this apparent vanishing act than at the control, which the researchers interpreted to mean they realized something weird was happening. They expected the box to still be there. However, that is not the only way researchers decide if a baby's figured out object permanence, and study results can vary depending on how you choose to hide an object from view. So if you volunteer your 14-month-old for one of these things, and they seem to be struggling, that does not mean they're behind schedule. And to be fair, we all know an adult who must still be working on object permanence, like my friend, who as soon as he puts his glasses down, swears that they glitch out of existence. And by friend, I mean just a friend. You know, just some guy. So it took baby you months to finally figure out that things outside of your body exist even when you can't see them. But what about things going on inside your body? Interoception is the ability to feel pretty much anything going on inside your body, be that a full bladder, an empty tummy, or my personal favorite, anxiety. And at some point in babyhood, you had to start paying attention to those little whispers from your body. But just like all of our previous skills, you can't ask babies if they're actually aware of their need to go pee or feel their heart pounding in their tiny baby chests, and so on. So, to find out when some interoception starts, researchers behind a study published in 2025 used cartoons. This sounds way better than the adults fake injuring themselves study. Sign me up for the cartoons one. The team used some basic recording equipment to track a baby's heart rate, respiratory rate, and eye movements while a bouncing pink star or a yellow cloud played on a screen. The 3-month, 9-month, and 18-month-old test subjects would then either watch the object move along with a jumping sound in time with their own heart rate or respiratory rate, or 10% faster or slower than those rates. But whether they could recognize they were in sync or out of sync, well, that is what the study was looking for. Now, it's important to note that this research ran into some troubles because of COVID-19. For one thing, the 3-month-olds were entirely different kids. They didn't grow up into the 9 and 18-month-olds that were tested. And for another, by the time the researchers' 9-month-olds had turned 18 months old for round 2, they had access to a lot less of them. In fact, this lack of availability led to every statistician's worst nightmare, not having a big enough sample to consider some trends significant. But with that caveat, in general, the team found that babies as young as 3 months preferred to watch the objects that moved in time with their heartbeats. For respiratory rates, the data were more mixed. That might be because of the sample size, but it did seem like at least 9-month-olds preferred the characters in sync. So more research needs to be done, but this study suggests that you can have a concept of your own heartbeat as early as 3 months old, whereas your own breathing may take longer to become aware of. But speaking of wanting things to be in sync, when I say we all had to develop a sense of rhythm, you might immediately think of someone who you know who seemingly never did that. Well, a study published back in 2009 in the journal Cortex investigated how well six-month-old babies can recognize rhythmic and melodic changes in a musical pattern. And once again, the researchers used attention as an indicator. They had a particular repeating musical sequence play through a speaker in the room with the baby and an experimenter. And when the time was right, the experimenter suddenly hit a button so that the sequence would change slightly, either its rhythm or its melody. If a baby looked toward the speaker soon after that change happened, that was interpreted as them recognizing the pattern was different. After the team confirmed the head looks happened far more than random chance would predict, they saw these six-month-olds could identify both rhythmic and melodic changes to the sequences. This is not quite the same skill as being able to, like, boogie to a specific beat, but we've all got to start out somewhere. So whether you got two left feet or are the dancing queen, those skills were probably already developing, or not, by your first birthday. For our last skill, we're gonna go a little abstract, because at some point in your life, you had to start figuring out where things fall on the spectrum of possibility. Like distinguishing your chance of going to space, which for most of us is merely improbable, versus going to Pluto, which as of right now is impossible, unless you have access to a magical school bus. A 2024 study wanted to figure out if 2 and 3-year-olds already had a handle on this difference, and what better way to test toddlers than with a gumball-like machine that dispensed little toy objects. The toys were either pink or purple in color, and depending on the experimental condition, it looked like the machine was only filled with purple, an equivalent amount of purple and pink, or something in between those two ratios. This helped create the odds that the children had to work with. But regardless of how many of each color there was, the prize that came out was always pink. So some kids were staring at a machine with only purple toys, but reached in and pulled out a pink toy anyway. That was dubbed the impossible condition. Regardless of what was in the machine and what came out, the experimenter would give the toy a gibberish name for the child to learn, and then the child would need to identify that toy among the other toys that had been introduced with different but equally fake names. The idea here was that the kids assigned to the impossible condition would recognize something was amiss and pay extra attention while learning that toy's name. And the results showed exactly that. Both the 2 and 3-year-olds in the impossible condition remembered that gibberish word better than even the super duper unlikely condition when there was only one pink toy visible inside the machine to start. In other words, the toddlers could distinguish between a possible 2.5% chance and an impossible 0% chance, which seems pretty fancy for people who are still potty training. Working with participants who can't speak can make a researcher's job a bit harder, but through some creative thinking and well-placed cartoons, even babies can be studied. And thanks to that, you can now confidently approximate when you first started lying or figured out the impossible. As for me, I'm gonna keep wondering where my glasses are when they are in fact on top of my head. Maybe I should just go ahead and get the bifocals. Is it time?